Hello out there, we're on the air, it's hockey night tonight. Tension grows, the whistle blows, and the puck goes down the ice. The goalie jumps and the players bump and the fans all go insane. Someone roars, Bobby scores at the good old hockey game. Oh, the good old hockey game is the best game you can name. And the best game you can name is the good old hockey game.
And now, the second hour of the amusement park here on 96.9 FM Wired. Iceman Insights, starring Michael Shockley, senior writer, webmaster, IcemanManiacs.com, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. All of your information about your beloved Evansville Iceman can be found at IcemanManiacs.com. How you doing, Michael?
Well, I've had an interesting day.
Uh-oh. Let me ask, do you still have a job?
Yes, I still have a job.
Do you have a baby in the oven?
No, okay. No, but funny you should say that.
Ah.
Bringing up oven. So there are some firsts in life that you never wish you have to experience. One of them is...
My mustache.
Yes, very true. Two of them is to operate under duress a fire extinguisher.
Whoa.
Yes. So... we have an electric oven at home, and trying to make dinner on Tuesday night, the whatever you call it, the thing at the bottom, I'm drawing a blank.
The metal coil?
Yeah, the coil. That's the word I was looking for. Well, it ceased to be metal and became fire.
Nice.
Yeah, in the middle of making dinner. And our first thing was, hey, look, there's a really bright light coming out of the oven. What's going on? And... You know, first intuition was, well, maybe food got on it and the food caught fire and you know, throw a little water on it and it'd be good to go. Throw a little water on it, that didn't work. So it got worse. So we pulled out the fire extinguisher from under the kitchen sink, and that didn't help either.
Whoa.
Yeah. That did
nothing.
It was
already burning that hot.
It was burning that hot. So I ran down to our garage and turned off the breaker to the oven. And that was the only thing that stopped it. And by the time it was done, about 4 or 5 inches of the coil was just not there. Completely melted off. So, yeah, public service announcement.
Yes.
One, always keep a fire extinguisher in your kitchen. And two, if that doesn't work, make sure your breaker box is properly labeled.
In the original Sims game, I never played that much, but my wife did. And
nerd alert.
Your Sim, like... One of the early parts of the game was your Sim's kitchen would catch on fire, and some of them would run into the house, and the dumb ones would just scream and move their hands up and down until they burned and died. And we had a fire in our kitchen once. A good friend of ours was cooking and lost control of the grease on the top, and it caught on fire, and she did the exact same thing, like a Sim. Just stood there screaming, moving her hands up and down until her boyfriend ran in and threw a dish towel over it to control the splatter. Mm-hmm. And but, yeah, you got to have a fire extinguisher.
Yes.
Just spend the money, put it underneath there, and hope you never use it.
Yeah, you can get one for about $20 at Walmart. There's a very basic one that's perfect for household use. And we thankfully had one. Not that it did us any good in this case. But once you use it once, it's no longer good. So we went out and bought a replacement right away just in case. But yeah,
now,
I was.
Didn't you just have your kitchen redone like a year ago because of a water main break?
Yeah. So water and fire are both trying to destroy our house. Yeah. So that's been my interesting experience recently.
It's good timing because we got no hockey to talk about, so it kind of works out all right.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah, have a fire extinguisher and make sure your breaker box is properly labeled, because when we bought our house, it was not properly labeled. And we actually went through one by one and tripped breakers one by one to figure out what everything controlled. And if we didn't know that, then who knows what would have happened.
Exactly.
And also, if my wife wasn't the one who said, it's an electrical fire, we need to unplug it. Who knows what would happen? Because I tried the water and the fire extinguisher first, and I was plumb out of ideas. And she said, it's an electrical fire. Unplug it.
I can't remember what that movie is, but you'll have to remind me. But at one point, they're like, well, we're going to crash. There's no sense in steering now. So,
yeah. Anyways, so. Iceman news and notes.
All right. On June the 5th, Iceman owner Ron Geary introduced the franchise's new head coach and director of hockey operations, Dwight Mullins.
Love it.
47-year-old native of Calgary, married, has a 14-year-old daughter. The wife and daughter live full-time in Dallas. He commutes off and on. Played 6 years of major junior hockey in the Western Hockey League, 227 points and 507 penalty minutes in 353 games.
Played with a 16-year-old Joe Sakic.
Really?
Yes, indeed.
Interesting. He was drafted in the fifth round of the 1985 NHL draft by the Minnesota North Stars.
90th overall. Nowadays, he would have been a third-round draft pick.
That's true, yeah. More teams. And then he played a few years of minor pro hockey, never did make it to the NHL, mainly played in the CHL, and these stats will tell you what kind of player he was. He had 66 points and 733 penalty minutes in 156 games. He was captain of the 1997 CHL champion Fort Worth Fire, and then after they won the championship, he retired as a player at the age of 30 and started getting into coaching. Do we know why he retired at such a young age? Have you talked to him?
No.
Okay. Well, maybe we'll find out sooner or later. Once he got into coaching, he coached the Allen Americans in the CHL for three seasons, went 128, 51, and 17, which is pretty darn good, with three playoff appearances, including one appearance in the finals. And then most recently coached in the ECHL with the Elmira Jackals for two seasons. Went 64, 65, and 15 with one playoff appearance. His contract situation there was up in the air after the season, so he got the okay to look elsewhere for employment, and that's how he ended up here with the Icemen. His contract is for two seasons, 2014-15 and 2015-16. Said he loves the fan support here, and so far the city and the people have been great. Some news and notes out of the press conference from when he was introduced. He said he will likely hire an assistant coach, which would be a first for this franchise.
Yep.
To officially have an assistant coach.
And let's just state for the record that the last two head coaches did not want an assistant coach.
Correct.
So it wasn't Ron Geary being cheap or undermining the team or anything else. And I know for a fact Jeff Pyle did not want one because when he was in Texas, he kind of got sewered by his assistant coach playing political games and everything else. So that was one of the jokes that I learned. I made a lot of jokes with Jeff Pyle, but I only made the assistant coach joke once. then I altered it to assistant GM. He was fine with that, me being the assistant GM. But
Till you got fired.
I said assistant coach, and he said, don't ever say that again.
Till you got fired as assistant GM, right?
Yes, I did get fired in the final game of the season as assistant GM.
Oh, well. Taking out the trash.
You learn. I'm ready to take over the New York Islanders with my experience.
He said the assistant coach would mainly focus on defense and handling all the extra paperwork and stuff that is now a part of the ECHL these days. But as we found out at the press conference, the assistant coach will not be Brian Patafi.
Yep, threw him right under the bus.
Yeah.
Good start.
Also, the affiliation is to be determined. The night of the press conference, Ron Geary and Dwight Mullins were on Eyewitness News. And Geary implied that the Columbus Springfield affiliation would be the first choice going forward. He wanted to get a coach hired before negotiating with them, so he had not talked to them at all about continuing to work with them. Mullins said he prefers to have just one affiliation.
Your question at the press conference, wasn't it?
Yeah. Said he prefers one affiliation, does not think that having a double affiliation is good. On Eyewitness News, he said that having two affiliates is, quote, like trying to keep two wives happy.
Yeah. How can you even keep one wife happy?
It's hard enough, right?
Yep.
But Mullins seemed a little more noncommittal about Columbus and Springfield than Geary. Ron seemed to be really interested in, we've done 2 years on one-year deals with them now, and he seems more interested in doing kind of a long-term deal for some stability there. And I think Mullins may want to do a long-term deal too, but not necessarily with Columbus and Springfield. I think he's kind of keeping his options open. So I would say there's probably a better than 50-50 chance that we continue with Columbus and Springfield just because it's familiar for everyone except the coach. But there are a few other NHL teams that are looking for ECHL affiliates right now, so we can't close the book on them. Washington is a team. Ottawa is looking for an affiliate. So there are some teams out there if Mr. Mullins decides that Columbus is not his cup of tea. So we'll find out in time.
And it'll be interesting, too, because you're seeing in the ECHL, some NHL teams are really embracing the ECHL level. Philadelphia goes into a lengthy relationship with Reading. Mm-hmm. Buffalo goes into a relationship with Elmira.
Sabres Community College.
Yes. And earlier in the season, we saw Edmonton purchase not only their AHL, but their ECHL team, and the Islanders are working really hard now with Stockton. Yeah. So,
and Indy signed a five-year deal with the Blackhawks.
Yep, so that is becoming more of the trendy thing to do right now.
Yeah. So we'll find out what happens. I would think, like I said, I think there's better than 50% chance that we stay with Columbus and Springfield, and I would be surprised, honestly, if it's not at least a two-year deal. I think we're not going to see another one-year deal, even with the coaching change. I just think Ron Geary is really going to push probably for a long-term deal, which in the ECHL, 2 years is long-term.
Yeah.
So that doesn't mean we're going to sign a five-year deal like Indy did. Anyway, about Coach Mullins, he said at the press conference he thinks the Icemen have a great core of players to build around. He values veterans but is not set on having the maximum of four, which seems to be the trend as well in the league. I don't know how many teams get to that maximum of four, but it doesn't seem like it's a priority really for anybody.
Remember when we had five or six our first year in the
CHL?
Yeesh. What a nightmare.
And he said he likes to play up-tempo and physical with tough, hard-nosed players. I like your question at the press conference. You mentioned who he had played with as a player and whether or not he would like to have some enforcer types on his team. And he thought long and hard about his answer and then just smiled and said, yeah.
Yep. I talked to him afterwards, and I brought up the Bellamy's, and he got a little defensive because the Bellamy's have that reputation. I love the guys. Rob Bellamy's a fantastic hockey player.
The one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The other one runs around a little bit, but that's what they do, and they get people off of their games. And I said, I'm a huge Bellamy Brothers fan, and we were talking about it, and I talked about playing with Tony Twist and Corey Kosher and Kelly Chase all at the same time, and he said, Derek, I felt like I was 6'6" out there. I could do anything I wanted. And those guys do change the mentality of the forwards that, in a bad case, guys can run around and cheap shot people and everything else, but they do give you more room on the ice because you're not going to get destroyed because someone's going to be eating knuckles if they destroy one of the more goal-scoring type forward.
Yeah, sometimes intimidation is merely about presence.
Yep.
Having someone there that guys know they'll have to answer to if they get out of line. So, yeah. So, in general, what is your take on Mr. Mullins?
I absolutely love the hire. It seemed like half of the asylum went bonkers over it, and he's a losing coach, and blah, blah, blah. Why would we bring it? But my favorite was someone said, I wish we would have hired the other guy. And again, we've done this before on Amusement Park Radio. Name it. Name that guy. Don't just say the other guy.
Yeah, the other guy.
But I'll tell you, I will take Mullins over the two other coaches that were hired this year, over Hillman in Indy and Lalonde in Toledo. And the reason is, 6 weeks ago we did the Amusement Park, and I had DJ Abisala from the Wheeling Nailers on, and he talked about it's a three-year building process in the ECHL. You got to bring in a coach. He's got to learn the league. He's got to build his players, build his system, and around the third year you start seeing teams advance. And, I mean, Greenville's in their eighth year, and they won their—they only had one playoff victory, round victory— in 8 years until this year, until they went to the conference final. That's how difficult this level is. He is the only coach that has been hired this year that has ECHL experience. And who knows our best eight players better than someone that's coached against us?
And
he's had to game plan against us.
Right.
So when we put out our protected list of eight guys, he's going to know what eight he wants. And then he's also going to know the best players on Elmira. And
that's true.
So he's going to be able, if a couple of those guys fall through the cracks on the protected list, all of a sudden we've got the best eight on our team, and we've got two or three
great players from Elmira that slipped through the cracks because he brought in two fantastic, a goaltender who broke the ECHL record for youngest shutout, and I don't know if they're going to protect him or not, but he obviously has connections with him, brought in also a fantastic forward, and either of those guys fall in, all of a sudden we've got a roster of 11 people that can play at this level. We're already ahead up on Indy and Toledo. And so he, I love the
you also move. Think he also knows really good players that won a lot of games in Reading and Wheeling because he was playing them a
yep.
lot. That's a couple of playoff teams. And
Chaz
Redding's
Johnson.
A team that, yeah, 2 years ago won the championship, and he's very familiar with those
yep.
those players. So, yeah, you've been around the block. You can't discount experience and just knowing the players, knowing your way around the league, knowing the agents too. There's a lot of stuff behind the scenes. It's not just about looking at Hockey DB and looking at stats.
Yep. I tell you what, I would take him over any of the two guys hired this year. I would definitely take him over your boyfriend Barry Trotz. I would rather have Dwight Mullins and his style over Barry Trotz any day. So, yep.
That's an interesting limb to go out on. Although
that's no limb.
You're probably not the only one who thinks that way.
Shocker's take.
There was a lot of negativity about the hiring, especially with how things went in Elmira last year. But that franchise has been a train wreck off and on. They've had a lot of issues with ownership and the building getting sold and an affiliation change. And there's just a lot going on there. So I think you look at last year as an outlier and look before that. In four seasons as a head coach before last year, he had four seasons above .600 winning percentage, which is not too shabby. You know how many times we've had a .600 winning percentage in six seasons?
Yeah,
once. And the one time we had that,
we didn't even win a playoff.
We got swept.
Game.
Right. So, I'm not down on him like a lot of people are. I'm not going to guarantee a championship either, but I'm kind of in that wait-and-see mode. I want to see how he builds the roster, what he does about the affiliation, and just give it time and see how things play out. You know, it's you don't win championships in June. Well, technically you do.
Yeah.
But you don't win next season's championship in June. You just got to wait and see how things play out. You know, last year, most of us, you and I included, really liked the Jeff Pyle hire, even though we both liked Rich Crum.
And we looked brilliant up until January 29th.
Yeah. You know, Pyle came in, said all the right things. The season started great, and then it just went into the tank. You know, some circumstances that were out of his control, and then it just never could get back on track. I like the Mullins hire, but it's with the caveat that I like the Pyle hire too. But that's just because I'm a glass half full kind of guy. Yep. I like to look at things the positive way rather than just be negative for the sake of being negative. I would rather be positive and be wrong than be negative and be right.
Yep.
So that's how I'm going to look at it. I'm not going to pass judgment yet. I was asked at the press conference, what do I think? It's way too early to think anything.
Yeah.
I'm going to digest it, see how things play out. And I told Drew Campbell, Stoopy. That's what my son Evan called him.
Nice.
We were at the Otters game, and he's Stoopy. I said, say hi, Stoopy. And Evan said, hi, Stoopy.
Nice.
So now
like
he's Stoopy.
Stoopy.
Yeah.
I like it.
So anyway, Stoopy asked me what I thought, and I said, I will pass judgment 72 games into the season.
Yeah.
And hopefully more than that.
And the thing is, if you want to complain on the asylum, you want to go on the asylum and say, we should have never fired Crum, you can make an argument. You want to say, we shouldn't have fired Pyle, you can make an argument. But you can't say, this is the wrong guy for this organization and not supply a name.
Yeah.
You got to supply a name of someone else. And so.
Well, it's like when, you know, we went through that with Olympic rosters. When the Olympic rosters were announced, everybody came out of the woodwork saying, well, such and such and such and such should have been on the roster. Well, who are you taking off?
Yep.
And then when it comes down to making that decision, crickets.
Yep.
And it's the same way with a coaching hire. If you don't like the coaching hire, okay, but back it up with reasons and give us someone who you think would be a better option.
And if you want to say, I just don't think we should be hiring a third coach in our third year in the ECHL, that's a really
good
point.
That's a fair point.
That's a fair point. No one can argue that.
Yeah.
You're right. But guess what? We're in that situation. We needed a coach.
Yeah. And guess what? Having our third coaching change in as many years, it still didn't keep people away from applying for it. We had 40 applicants for the job, including 8 from Europe. So it's not like the Icemen are branded a goalie.
Yeah.
A coaching carousel. So it is what it is. You were in the situation you were in, but there were still plenty of qualified candidates, and I like the hire. We'll see how it plays out, but I definitely am not as negative about it as a lot of people are. So, but then again, that's usually the case.
Yeah. So Dwight Mullins comes right into the Iceman organization, and he's already got to deal with trade deadline for finishing up any trade for future considerations, had to set the season-ending roster, and there's a huge move.
Yeah.
For the Iceman.
Yeah. The deadline to complete the future considerations trades was last Friday the 13th, and we had one that we still had to take care of. Jacob Johnston's contract rights were dealt to the Greenville Road Warriors, and that completed the trade that brought Matt Lowry here before the season began. Tough to see Jacob go, but...
You got to pay.
You got to pay. We got a whole season of Matt Lowry out of him, and we got Jacob Johnston for the whole season. Yep. And, you know, if Mullins comes in and makes that move, then clearly Jacob was not in his plans. So, really, you didn't give up anything that you would have had going forward anyway. So... That's just how it works.
Well, and I wouldn't read into it that Jacob Johnston wasn't in Dwight's plan, because I think Jacob Johnston's in the plans for any team in the ECHL. He's easily a top four forward, so, or top four defenseman at this point. But you can't come into a new job and piss off some GM and coach from another team and try to lowball them the day before the deadline's over with. I mean, you got to look at Matt Lowry's stats. The guy was fantastic. He got a 19-game call up to the AHL. You gotta trade kind for kind. You can't just like, well, this guy's kind of half broken, so we're gonna send you this broken wheeled defenseman over there. So, and I tell you what, Greenville signs Jacob Johnston. Oh man, they are gonna be tough. They already got the two big D back there, Mike Marcoux, who's one of my favorites. I think he's one of the best all around defensemen in the league. They got the big guy. They could be really solid on the back end next year.
In other news, at the deadline, the Stockton Thunder and Fort Wayne Comets completed a prior trade as Rich Crom's Stockton Thunder acquired the rights to a former Iceman player.
Jason Dale!
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. Been like practicing.
That was nice. So, yeah, that was the trade deadline that led up
How about the frequent flyer miles? Jason Dale is racked up. Starts in Evansville, gets shipped out to the West Coast, shipped back to Fort Wayne, and now shipped back to
California.
Yep.
Yeah, that's a lot of travel. So the future considerations deadline led up to the season-ending rosters being announced on Monday the 16th. No real surprises there. The Iceman roster included all 19 guys who were on the protected list, minus Jacob Johnston. Returning players and available free agents can now be signed for next season. Qualifying offers are due on July 1. You can only qualify up to 8 players, but anyone who signs a contract before July 1 does not need to be qualified. Any player on the season-ending roster who has not signed a contract or been given a qualifying offer by July 1st will become a free agent. So the hard decisions are, it's time.
Yep.
This is when you really start building things and signing players and deciding who you're going to let go and who you're going to move on from and who you want to build around. So who knows when things will actually be announced, but this is when Dwight Mullins is going to start building his roster and... In time, we'll start finding out how he's going to make the Iceman look this coming season, how many guys he's going to bring back, and how much new blood he's going to bring in.
Mark your calendars.
The ECHL announced the 2014-15 schedule right when our last show ended. The Iceman home and season opener is Saturday, October 18th against Gwinnett. The home
Heard it here first.
Yeah. The home finale is Sunday, March 29th against South Carolina. That's the only time the Stingrays come to town. And again, we finish with a bunch of road games. 6 straight on the road after the home finale.
See, that's not a lot. Well, not compared to what we had to do this year.
Yeah, not compared to this past year. The season finale is Saturday, April 11th at South Carolina. So our home and road finales are both against a non-divisional team. And our home opener is also against a non-divisional team. The home schedule includes 27 weekend games. That's equal to last year. We have 12 Saturday home games, which is up from 10, and 10 Friday home games, which is down from 11. Opponents, every team in the Eastern Conference visits at least once within the division. The Indy Fuel will come the most often, 6 times. Three games each against Fort Wayne, Cincinnati, and Kalamazoo, and only once will the Toledo Walleye come to town.
Yeah, I think they're sick of driving here, especially through all the snow.
The most common non-divisional home opponent is Reading. They will come here four times. Dates of note, our first game at home against Indy is Saturday, October 25th, which is the second game of the season. First time the Comets come to town isn't until Friday, December 12th, and the first time the Cyclones come to town isn't until Saturday, January 17th, almost to the All-Star break before the Cyclones come to Evansville.
Yeah, we talked about it last year about we had a great schedule for making the playoffs last year because we got Cincinnati at home more times than we went out there. We got Fort Wayne six times at home and only three times away this past year. Well, we're paying the piper now because it's all turned.
It's flipped around this year. Other games of note at home, Education Day is Wednesday, November 5th against Elmira. That's a 9:30 a.m. start. The New Year's Eve game is on New Year's Eve, Wednesday.
Get out of here.
Yeah. Wednesday, December 31st against Toledo with supposedly post-game fireworks. Do you know anything about that?
Nope.
Interesting. There was the joke online that it wouldn't actually be fireworks. It would just be like video of fireworks shown on the Jumbotron.
That'd be sweet.
My joke was that we'd turn the lights out and Brian Vall would be standing at center ice with a couple of sparklers.
Waving his jazz hands.
Yeah. And there is a game on Martin Luther King Day this year, Monday, January 19th, against Cincinnati, but it will be a standard 7:15 p.m. start. The matinee last year just didn't draw the way they hoped it would, so there is an MLK Day game, but it is in the evening like any other weekday game.
Personal soapbox here, I'm glad we're playing on Martin Luther King Day. I think it's one of the most important holidays on the calendar. I'm not that far removed from the 60s and the race riots in Detroit and everything else, and the commitment that man made through peaceful means to make a huge change in this nation needs to be celebrated. Now, granted, it's a Monday night, and it won't be attended well, and it was really poorly attended on Monday.
Yes,
people just can't get off of work. It's just the way it is, but I'm really super glad we are doing Martin Luther King Day again.
I'm with you. On the road schedule, there is no road trip to Florida and Orlando this year. We do go visit all of the teams in the Eastern Conference at least once. Eight trips to Cincinnati, six trips to Fort Wayne, four to Indy, three to Toledo, one to Kalamazoo. There are four trips to the Northeast for Elmira, Reading, and Wheeling, totaling eight games. And there are two trips to the Southeast for South Carolina, Greenville, and Gwinnett, totaling six games. But again, no trip to Florida this year. Some fan road trip ideas. The only Saturday game at Fort Wayne is on December 27th, which might get screwed up with Christmas plans for folks. The only Saturday game at Indy is January 24th, which happens to be the night after we're in Cincinnati on Friday. So that would be a fun weekend. There's a Friday game in Cincinnati, a Saturday night in Indy, and then we're home against Indy on Sunday.
Yeah.
So you can see three games in 3 days in three different cities and all featuring the Icemen. And then toward the end of the season, the only Saturday game at Cincinnati is way down on April 4th, which is the fourth from last home game of the season. And that is the last easy road trip of the season because the final weekend of the season is way down southeast, South Carolina. So if you're looking for times to go follow the Iceman on the road, those would probably be three of the best opportunities. Overall, we do not play any games against the Western Conference home or road. We play three games in 3 days eight times. That's down from nine last year, with 13 additional back-to-backs. That's down from 14 last year.
One thing of note, though, a lot of times when we played our three and threes, they were either all at home or they were all on the road. This year, on this calendar, it's really bad.
It's a lot of, yeah, a lot of back and forth.
You play Friday night, you travel to Cincy on Saturday, you come back and play on Sunday. So there's a lot of hidden travel in there. The three and threes this year are horrible compared to the three and threes last year.
Yeah, that only happened, I think, twice last year, where it was home Friday, road Saturday, home
I think it only
Sunday.
Happened once.
Really?
Yep.
Yeah, so those are really brutal. The longest homestand is six games. That happens twice. And the longest road trip is eight games. That's in February. We go 3 weeks, three full calendar weeks between home games. So people will be going through withdrawal by the time we return home.
I really think it's a great schedule, though.
Yeah, in general,
and
I agree.
I will take 2 6-game homestands over that 1 12-game homestand.
Yes.
That was just horrible.
Yeah, especially when we had like 6 games in 9 days.
Yes.
Or something. That was crazy. Some notes elsewhere. The 2 Toledo outdoor games are Saturday, December 27th against Kalamazoo and Saturday, January 3rd against Fort Wayne. The Icemen are at home on January 3rd, but they're on the road on December 27th at Fort Wayne. So if anyone wants to go up for one of those Toledo outdoor games, that December 27th game, Walleye K-Wings, would be your best option.
I would go in a heartbeat if I could go.
If you weren't going to be working.
Yep.
And also, the ECHL All-Star Game is Wednesday, January 21st, down in Orlando.
I wasn't very excited about that, and I'm probably still not excited about the All-Star Game, especially at this level. But after being in that Orlando arena and that whole area down there, it's worth, if you can work it out, make the family trip or whatever, it's worth going.
Cool. So anyway, that's kind of the highlights. Printer-friendly schedules are now up on IcemanManiacs.com. I have calendar graphics for the Icemen as well as the Fuel, Comets, and Cyclones for those who want to have an easier time of trying to plan road trips to see the team. You can print off all 4 of those teams' schedules and compare them side by side and plot out your trips. So IcemanManiacs.com.
Next up, the best 2.5 minutes of the amusement park. Nobody's talking. Shockers Hockey Rocks Song of the Week.
You're right. It is about 2.5 minutes this week. This is a short one. Today, June 18th, is Paul McCartney's 72nd birthday. How about that?
How about that?
Would you have thought he was 72 years old if you looked at the guy in a picture?
Yep.
In honor of his birthday, this is one of the Beatles' many, many hits. Paul was the primary songwriter and lead vocalist on this one. It's a song I used to play at Swander as a sing-along song during intermissions, and it was always fun to listen to people sing to this. From 1963, it's the Beatles. I Saw Her Standing There.
1, 2, 3, 4! Look.
Exactly. And Daddy.
And
Daddy.
And we're back on the Wired Iceman Insights. Shocker. Dirty D. Playoffs.
Playoffs? In the NHL, the Los Angeles Kings won the Stanley Cup, beating the New York Rangers in five games.
Just like I predicted it.
It was the second cup in three seasons for the Kings. Are you sure you didn't pick the Canucks?
No, I'm positive I didn't pick the Canucks.
In the AHL, the Texas Stars beat the St. John's Ice Caps 4-1 in the Calder Cup Finals to win the Calder Cup. And in the ECHL, the Alaska Aces won the Kelly Cup, beating the Cincinnati Cyclones in 6 games. It is the third championship in the ECHL for Alaska. They are the third team to win 3 titles. South Carolina and Hampton Roads were the first two. Former Iceman goalie Rob Medore, now with Cincinnati, was named playoff MVP, and he is the first playoff MVP from the losing team in the 26-year history of the ECHL.
And he earned it.
He
was amazing.
You went over for games 4 and 5, correct?
Yes, I did. It was fantastic. We had a blast. It's really nice. I've got to meet all the broadcasters and a bunch of people from the ECHL, and obviously they're all in attendance. All the ECHL brass was there. So I got to hang out with Pat Kelly and talk to him for a while.
Huh.
Yeah.
Namesake.
Yes, exactly. Just awesome. Cincinnati has a restaurant on the 5th floor overlooking the ice. Friday night was media VIP night, prime rib, the whole thing. So we ate dinner up there, watched the game from up there, and we liked it so much that Saturday when we bought tickets, we watched the first period and then went back up to the restaurant and sat up there. I had a Molson Canadian on tap while watching the hockey game, so I probably haven't done that since the 90s going back to watching the Toronto Maple Leafs at Maple Leaf Garden. So,
I thought you were going to be working.
Oh, I did.
As an intern.
Yep, I did some work. I carried the camera around for Barry Schickling of Double S Media, who does ECHL Week, and did some interviews with Dan McCourt, who was former NHL linesman for many, many years, and he was in attendance because the NHL was scouting the officials of the game.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to talk to him for a little bit, did some interviews with the Cincinnati coach, the Cincinnati Cyclones president / owner. So, yeah, I got to do all that, too. I did that all on Saturday. Friday night was a fun night since
cool.
We kind of traveled in. But, yeah, great time, great attendance. Not a sellout by any means, but easily 5,000 in the building. Loud. Game 4, Cincinnati won. It was a blast. Game 5, Alaska won, and Medore stood on his head. He stole the game in game 4. They were outshot like 42-18 or something like that.
Whew.
And Medore was amazing. And then, but Alaska, boy, oh boy, they just shoot and shoot and shoot. So depth, talent wise, offensively, their 3 forward lines, they just kept coming over and over. They just never stopped. They just kept throwing pucks at the net, got a couple of lucky bounces and a couple of beautiful setups, and they earned the cup. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, I saw Gerald Coleman, the goalie for Alaska, actually had better stats than Medore, but he didn't face nearly as many shots either.
He only
faced like 23 shots a game, and Medore was facing a lot more than that. So,
and I believe there's something like he's the first back-to-back goalie to win cups in the Kelly Cup or something like that, or back to play in back-to-back finals or something like that. So, yeah, Medore outplayed him easily.
So I think the airline industry really needs to thank the world of pro hockey for helping out its bottom line. This year's championship matchups in the top 3 leagues were insane as far as travel goes. In the NHL, there was a lot of talk during the NBC broadcast about the coast-to-coast travel. There are 2,469 miles between New York and L.A., but that's nothing. That was actually the closest of the three.
Wow.
In the AHL, again, the Texas Stars are in Austin. And St. John's is in Newfoundland, which is so far east that the Newfoundland time zone is actually 1.5 hours ahead of Eastern time.
Yeah.
It's the easternmost city in North America. It's actually closer to London, England than it is to Edmonton. And it is over 1,150 miles northeast of New York City. That's way out there.
Yep.
Austin and St. John's are 2,653 miles apart. I looked it up just out of curiosity. That's 8 hours of flying with 3 to 5 hours of layovers in Chicago and Toronto. And it's over $800 a person round trip to fly from there. But wait, the ECHL top that. Cincinnati and Anchorage are 3,096 miles apart as the crow flies. Although if a crow flew that far, he'd be dead. 8 hours in the air with a 1 hour layover in Minneapolis, St. Paul. And that flight costs you $1,500 per person round trip.
I talked to Mike Benton, the play-by-play announcer for the Alaska Aces. They actually flew in Tuesday night after they played in Alaska to Chicago O'Hare, and they had a sleeper bus waiting there. So they got in about midnight, loaded up the sleeper bus, and then drove from Chicago to Cincinnati because there wasn't a direct flight into Cincy.
Huh.
And very few teams commercially, or very few airlines commercially, have 28 seats available. So the team was all broken up on two or three planes to get everyone there and to get everyone back.
Right.
Cincinnati had to do the same thing too.
Because by the time you know that you're going to need these flights, you're only a couple weeks out.
It's not the end. No, yeah.
A couple days out
exactly.
For some of them.
So the NHL has chartered flights, but for Cincinnati and Alaska, it was all buying up seats that were available for the trip.
It makes you wonder at that cost, $1,500 round trip per person, if it might be cheaper to just rent out a charter plane and take everybody on one plane, because that's a lot of money. You figure $1,500 a person.
Well, Cincinnati said that it cost them $50,000 to go out there for games 1 through 3.
Wow.
So, yeah, and can you imagine if they would have won game 6
and then they had to
fly
go
out there for game 7, another $50,000, and then to lose?
Woo.
So, yep.
Yeah, talk about an expensive loss. Man.
So here we up next. Not sure how long we're going to do this. You think we're going to go with Springfield. I know in the office there's a lot of frustration with the affiliation. So, but regardless, for now, let's talk about the Birds and the BJs.
Yeah, we don't know if the Icemen will continue the affiliation with Springfield and Columbus. But in case we do, if we remain affiliated with them, Dwight Mullins replacing Jeff Pyle won't be the only change in the organization's coaching tree. There is consistency at the top. The Blue Jackets gave head coach Todd Richards an extension. He's now under contract through 2016-2017.
He proved that they were the real deal.
Yeah, this past...
My beliefs proved that they weren't.
This past season, Richards led the Jackets to their best season ever and their first two playoff victories in franchise history. Meanwhile, Brad Larson, who has been head coach of Springfield for the past two seasons, has been promoted to the NHL as an assistant coach under Richards. Larson's only 36 years old, signed a multi-year deal with the Jackets after leading Springfield to back-to-back division titles, including their best regular season ever this past season. But back-to-back first-round playoff exits means we're shuffling the deck a little bit.
Yep.
Taking over for Larson in Springfield at the helm is 42-year-old Jared Bednar, who spent the last two seasons as Springfield's assistant coach. Before that, he spent two seasons as head coach of the Peoria Rivermen when they were still in the AHL. And before that, he got his start in the ECHL as head coach of the South Carolina Stingrays and led them to the Kelly Cup Championship back in 2009.
Yep. And they love him back there. Joey Z put out a pretty nice press release for South Carolina Stingrays.
Cool.
In regards to it. Oh, boy. Get ready, folks. We played it once. It was a huge hit. Now we can't stop. Remember when you pitched it to me and you said, I'm not sure if this is going to be a weekly thing or not? But it is. Rap Masterpiece Theater.
It's going to be a weekly thing until we run out of ideas for songs. We went old school with the first two. We started with Baby Got Back by Sir Mix-a-Lot from 1992. Then we went even older school with 1988.
Bastard. Did you say older school as the year I graduated?
From 88, It Takes Two by Rob Bass. This week, we're going to spring forward to the new millennium, all the way to 2002 with a song that was suggested by my wife, Amanda, when we were trying to figure out something a little newer to do. And I guess it's fitting, since it is getting warmer outside.
Well, and you tried to burn down your kitchen.
Yeah, that's true. Very true. This is Stephen Rickard as Nelly, Hot in Her. Iceman Insights and Tata Tunes Productions present Rap Masterpiece Theater. Some know him as Jam Master Stevie Steve, while others call him Rap Master Rickard. He's straight out of Muhlenberg County. The man, the myth, the lyrical legend, Stephen Rickard.
Hot in. So hot in here. So hot in. I was like good gracious, bodacious, flirtatious, trying to show patience, looking for the right time to shoot my steam. You know, looking for the right time to flash them keys. Then, I'm leaving. Please believin', me and the rest of my heathens. Check it, got it locked at the top of the Four Seasons. Penthouse, rooftop, bird's eye feeding, no deceiving, nothing up my sleeve, no teasing. I need you to get up on the dance floor, cause that man what he's asking for. Cause I feel like busting loose and I feel like touching you, and can't nobody stop the juice, so baby, tell me what's the use? I said, it's getting hot in here, so hot, so take off all your clothes. I said, it's getting hot in here, so hot, so take off all your clothes. I'm getting so hot I want to take my clothes off. Yeah, okay, I'll put them back on now.
This has been Rap Masterpiece Theater, starring Stephen Rickard. Tune in next time for another hip-hop classic. Until then, keep it real, homies.
What? Over? Did you say over? Nothing is over until we decide it is!
It's on like Donkey Kong.
Woohoo! Are you ready?
Yes!
I said, are you ready?
Jason Dale!
Daddy's too hot.
I like peni.
That's what she said.
Hump.
I love BJ's.
Fur Circus.
Steven Ricker's testicles.
D-butted.
No touchy place.
Beer.
Broken penis.
Vitellary Filipula.
Filipuli.
Filipalapala.
Use your big boy words.
La 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 la.
Who's the brains in this outfit? My point exactly.
That was totally wicked!
Oh, indeed. That just got my taters all a-roaring there.
Woo!
Back here on Iceman Insights, Shocker, Benigni, skating down memory lane, inspired by Johnny Blues and Seven Kells.
I like that that's his nickname now.
That's horrible. He always tries to defend it. He blames, like, NBC and all the experts and stuff. He picked Blues in seven after the Blackhawks went up 3-2. Blackhawks were up 3-2. I said, do you believe? He said, Blues in seven.
Well, he's a Blackhawks fan. Clearly, he has bad judgment anyway.
Yeah.
Otherwise, he wouldn't be a Blackhawks fan.
He's also a goalie.
That's true. And you know what we say about goalies.
Yeah, they're all weird.
So, we're going all the way back this time to April 5th, 2014.
Wow, what a coincidence.
2.5 months ago. The Iceman won 7-2 at Elmira.
I remember that game.
Yeah, I would hope so. Most goals scored in a road game during the 2013-14 season, and it was our only win in 5 games against the Jackals. And the reason why I bring this up is because, well, Elmira was coached by Dwight Mullins, and they won 4 out of the 5 games against the Icemen head-to-head, and as Danny Matthews said on Facebook, he managed to have an .800 winning percentage against us this past season despite having a lousy team. So just the fact that we don't have to play against him should improve our record.
Yeah, that's proof right there. Exactly. That's good thinking. Brian Patafi, Tweet of the Week.
You can follow Brian Patafi on Twitter, BPATAFIE. He said, quote, playing in the Pro Hockey Trainers Golf Tourney this weekend. Hope to be paired up with the Maple Leafs guys. They get on the course the earliest.
Ah, very nice.
Yeah.
My favorite Patafi tweet of the week I saw today. He was tweeting back and forth with Jamie McGinn.
I saw that.
And
I saw that too.
And someone jumped into the conversation. It was like 69 at 69 Beach Babe, and she said, "Also, he's scrumptious." And Patafi responded, "Him or me?"
I thought that was pretty good.
Oh, boy. In other fun Twitter stuff, did you see the Matt Shepke tweet about the World Cup?
No.
He said, quote, "Soccer is embarrassing. You're telling me that a broken nose would keep me from a Stanley Cup? I don't think so. Find your balls."
Nice.
Don't hold back, Matt. Tell us how you really feel. In another social media news, Ryan Huff said on Facebook last week, quote, "Going to hockey class for the first time in a while tonight with Derek Benini teaching. This could get interesting." So how did hockey class with Ryan Huff go?
It was awesome. I saw him come out there, and I said, "Dude, you're doomed." But no, we had a really good class. We worked on some things and everything else, so it was a lot of fun. I did throw him under the bus one time. I was talking about one-timers. And, you know, it's a beginning adult hockey class, so I'm trying to teach just the simple wrist shot for accuracy's sake and everything else, and get the shot on net. And he's firing off these one-timers. And I'm like, you know, if you're some kind of superstar like the Iceman or Ryan Huff, you'll shoot a one-timer in this situation. But for the rest of us, let's just keep it to the wrist shot. But no, we had a lot of fun. So,
would you
he
like
didn't
to...
come back.
While we're at it, would you like to... plug the adult hockey classes and when they are and whatnot?
Yeah, Swander Ice Arena. All you have to have is helmet, shin guards, gloves, and a stick because it is a hockey class, and we can help you find all that stuff. But it's a six-week class, $10. It's $60 for 6 weeks, or you can drop in. I think it's $12 or $15. Tuesday nights, 8:45 to 10 o'clock, and we just kind of work on the basics, and we work plenty of scrimmages in and everything else. So Kelly Wonder came out to one class as well.
Really?
And she said, "That's the most I've ever skated, and I haven't seen her since either." So I think she was doing a fantastic job.
I think she was doing it in the spring, too, and she was having some issues with her skates were gnawing in her feet really bad or something. So.
Well, all I know is I taught the last class that she came to, so... There you go.
So you're the beginning hockey class kiss of death.
Pretty much.
Okay, got it.
I also wanted to share another Twitter thing that I saw yesterday that I thought was pretty funny, was Bobby Ryan of the Ottawa Senators, former of the Anaheim Ducks, and he's got a Twitter picture of him with some chick model or something like that, and he tweeted a picture of North Carolina Oceanside and said, "Having an amazing time here in North Carolina. You have all treated me better than I deserve, blah, blah, blah." To which Peter Holland, center for the Toronto Maple Leafs, responded, "Bobby, hit the gym."
Nice. So one last thing I wanted to mention real quick. Wanted to shout out to Iceman fan Eric Titzer helping me out with some computer issues. I'm sad to report that the oven is not the only thing in Casa de Shockley that has bit the dust. After processing a bazillion transactions and injuries, the Shockinator...
Yeah, especially all of them two seasons ago.
Yeah. The Shockinator 8000 has met its demise.
Wow.
It died a few weeks ago, and Eric Titzer is an IT guy and does some computer building and stuff on the side and is hooking me up with a replacement. So
the Shockinator 8000 went the same way as Phil Plant and Matt Jens?
Yeah. Exactly. It is on the permanent long-term IR.
Wow.
So there you go. I guess next season we'll have to call it the Shockinator 9000.
There you go. Hockey 101.
Helping Iceman fans new and old alike understand the game a little bit better, this is a question from Crystal Sadler. She said, "What determines 5-on-5 versus 4-on-4 when coincidental penalties are called? Mr. Official, would you like to explain?"
Oh, crikey. Well, in USA hockey...
Would you like to pause so you can look up the rule book?
In USA hockey, which is what the youth leagues play by, there are no... when there's coincidental penalties, players are replaced. So you go and serve your 2 minutes in the penalty box, your position is replaced by someone, so you stay 5-on-5 hockey. which means when the 2 minutes are up, you don't come right out of the hockey or right out of the penalty box to play hockey. You have to stay in there until there's a stoppage of play. Got that?
Yes.
In the NHL, AHL, ECHL, because they're all a family, they play pretty much by the same rule book. When coincidental penalties are called, NHL, I think, changed this about 20 years ago to, again, increase offense and everything else. They said, hey, instead of replacing these guys, let's leave them in the sin bin and play four-on-four hockey. There's more ice out there. There's more chance for scoring, blah, 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 to which the New Jersey Devils and the Detroit Red Wings ruined because they just put everyone back in the zone and didn't try to score. Hence the reason why we have a shootout now and 2 points for a shootout victory and one for a shootout loss, blah, 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 blah. We don't need to rehash all of that. But that is the situation there.
So why are there times when they do 5-on-5? Sometimes, I know, coincidental majors,
yes,
you do 5-on-5. But sometimes you see them do 5-on-5 with coincidental minors, too.
No, you don't. Nope.
Are you sure?
I am absolutely positive. Now, if you have weird things like one team's on a power play and then the team that's on the power play gets a penalty so that they get, you might have like teams on a power play and they get a double minor for a rough, and then the shorthanded team gets one minor for a rough. Then you get into all kinds of crazy mathematics and everything else. But no, every time that there is 5-on-5 and there is a minor called against opposing players, it goes to 4-on-4 at the professional level.
I could have sworn I've seen 5-on-5 done before, but
nope.
Now I'm going to really pay attention to that next season.
Now, a lot definitely do. And in the ECHL, it's like Stephen Halber does a great job, head of off-ice officials for the Evansville Icemen, as well as timekeeper, as well as trying to manage Tommy Mason and
Tommy Mason's
the referees.
Wrangler.
Yes. I like that. But sometimes the official will throw two players in the box, and he'll just swing by Halber and say, and he'll leave. And then Steven is left with trying to decipher what the situation is. So if you have a double minor, you're not playing 4-on-4 for 4 minutes. So if you have opposing players with double minors, two for roughing, two for slashing, two for roughing, two for tripping, you're going to play 5-on-5.
Right.
Or if you have 10-minute misconducts,
yeah,
offsetting 10-minute misconducts, you're going to play 5-on-5.
Right.
So you won't, yeah, it's easier to see at the NHL level. The ECHL level, it's a little bit, because we don't have the technology and everything else, and we're not designed for TV, we're designed for in-game experience, it can get confusing why things are happening the way they are.
And if you're confused, don't feel bad, because it's confusing even if you have the rule book right in front of you, because there's like 30 pages of examples of different types of combinations of penalties and how you're supposed to handle them.
When I take the USA Hockey open book exam, because there's
thankfully
there's an open book and a closed book exam at the just the USA Hockey level, at least 10%, if not 20% of the questions, 10 to 20 questions are about Team X has a player in the box at this at 210. Team Y has a player in the box at 350. There is a goal scored at 510. Who comes out of the box?
If anyone.
Yes.
Right.
And yes. And there's just case book and everything else. So, yes, it gets very tricky.
There's all kinds of stuff about coincidentals and when you serve, when you don't, when you wait for a whistle, when you don't. And, yeah, that's another thing that really complicates is when a goal is scored, who comes out, if anyone?
Yep.
And how does it go forward from there? So, yeah. I guess in general, for most fans' purposes, just trust that the officials know what they're doing, which I know is a stretch sometimes, but trust that they know what they're doing and they're handling the penalties the right way, because they may not always call the right penalty, but in general they seem to get it right as far as how to handle coincidentals and whatnot.
Dan McCourt was asked in that interview that I taped for ECHL Week, what was the NHL looking for in referees? And he said that every league, the NHL goes to every league, AHL, ECHL, SPHL, NCAA, and they rank the top 10 referees and top 10 linesmen. Every year they rank them. And he said in this game, he was asked, what is he looking for? And he said, common sense.
It's like, these guys know the rule book and everything else. This is all about how they manage the game and common sense. They will lose points if they hold something so strict to the rule book that it doesn't make sense in the game.
Yeah.
And I know in America we're kind of freaking out about the logic of that.
Yeah.
But it is all about the flow of the game.
Yeah.
And you can have a common sense call that is fair to both teams, whatever it may be, that will go a lot farther than throwing some guy out of a game and dealing with, you know, affecting a championship round.
Yeah. Well, it's a lot about reading the situation, knowing the players involved, knowing where you are in the game. You can look at the rule book and say, that's a black and white rule. But as odd as it sounds, black and white rules can still be judgment calls.
Yes. Well, and it's little things like charging, boarding, checking from behind. They can have different, you know, checking from behind in the pro level, I think, is an automatic 5-minute major. So you can, you know, someone may be a check from behind, but it wasn't worth a 5-minute major. So maybe you give them 2 minutes for roughing and 2 minutes for elbowing, or 2 minutes for roughing and 2 minutes for boarding. There's little things like that, that's what they're looking for at the next level, where that the team that was the offending team is punished correctly. The team that was roughed up still has power play opportunities, but they're not. But that 5-minute major isn't affecting
right.
the outcome of the game.
Yeah, that's interesting, though.
Yep, I thought it was a really well said. Ooh, the dangling tangent.
Yes, we finished the show with a quick off-topic topic. This is, I don't know where this came from. It's just kind of a random question I thought of a while back. So if Ron Geary or some other very rich person comes up to you and says, I'm giving you $1 million. It's not for you. It is to donate to the charity of your choice. Which charity would you donate $1 million to?
Ah, easy.
If it's not your money.
Youth Incorporated.
Hey!
Closing in on 25 years that Andy and Nina Fuller have ministered to youth of the tri-state area, rock and roll, punk rock, art, this radio station, and everything else. And they've done it all 100% on raising support. Andy's taken mortgages on his house just so that kids can go on trips, music trips, and everything else, just to have an opportunity to build relationships, just to help them out of bad family situations and everything else. Has always not targeted, but never been afraid of the quote at risk unquote kids, kids from rough families and divorced families and everything else, and never seen a ministry do so much with so little. So that's where his money would go.
And if you'd like to donate, not $1 million, but if you'd like to donate to Youth Incorporated, how can you do that?
You can go to the new website is Wired, 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 and all the information is on there, and you can donate online. It's all secure and everything else.
Yeah, cool. I don't know what mine would be.
Oh. Well, you put the whole show together, and you still didn't come up with
one?
Yeah,
I don't know. There are a bunch of charities that I would certainly consider. I think if I had $1 million, I'd probably split it up and give $100,000 to 10 different ones,
because... Yeah.
There are a lot that I think are very legitimate and do very good things with the money. You know, top of mind, something cancer related, you know, something for breast cancer. My mom's a breast cancer survivor. Something neurological, the Michael J. Fox Parkinson's Foundation, I think, does a lot of great work. MDA, you know, there's so many Red Cross. There's so many different charities that in a perfect world, if you had a ton of money to throw around, you would support a lot of them. I think it would be very tough to choose just one. So, yeah, if I had $1 million, I would get on my knees and beg Ron Geary to let me split it up 10 ways.
Yeah. And not to mention, again, it's kind of a slam dunk, but 911 gives hope and all the work that they have done for special needs kids in the tri-state as well. So,
yeah, agreed. Maybe give one to one of the hockey foundations too, you know, EYHA.
Yep.
Give money to EYHA or in your favorite NHL city. Every NHL team has their local charitable foundation. The Blues have the 14 Fund, the Predators have the Predators Foundation and whatnot. So,
did this, speaking of EYHA, did this slip through your wide screen internet mind of Mark Cody is now the president of the EYHA?
Has that been officially announced?
He is the... Oh. I guess so. Yeah, I'm pretty sure he's the hockey director for the EYHA. Not president, director of the EYHA.
I heard that a while back, taking the place of Craig McDonald.
Yes.
I heard that a while back that he was going to take that job, but I didn't know if it was official and public yet.
Oops.
Now it is.
There you go.
So perhaps breaking news. I don't know. We'll find out if people get surprised by that news. That's cool, though. That's Dixie and I were talking about that the other day, that there's so many examples now of former Iceman players who have put down roots in Evansville. You know, Matt Jens is back in town because his girlfriend or wife, I think she's now his wife, owns a business here. So that's another guy. We were at the Otters game on Saturday, and Matt Jens just happened to be there.
Yeah.
So, of course, you
and
know,
that's
he got swarmed by maniacs after the game.
Yeah, 15 years ago, St. Louis started becoming a great youth hockey place because Al MacInnis and all these former St. Louis Blues loved the city, and when they retired, they stayed there.
Yeah.
And we talked about it a couple of years ago. That's what this town needs to get our youth to the next level. And now we've got Matt Jens. Matt Pierce was coaching the high school team until he had to leave because of work issues, but Matt Jens has taken over that Thunder travel team.
Jens has, really?
Yep. He did. He finished it up for Matt Pierce last year.
Cool.
Now, I don't know if he's coming back this year or not, but I know he worked with it. Mark Cody, director of hockey for the EYHA now. So, yep, and it's just going to make our kids better.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Final thoughts.
Next show, tentatively in 4 weeks on July the 16th. We'll have all kinds
It'll
of stuff.
It'll be an awesome
NHL
show.
NHL draft between now and then.
Free agency.
And
not to mention our own ECHL free agent frenzy, protected list, the whole idea. So, yep. And hopefully an interview with Dwayne Mullins.
Cool.
I think is that it?
I guess
so. So nice. Let's wrap it up.
All right.
Oh, he is. Yeah, I guess that's my job.
Hey, Derek, how about we wrap it up?
He is Michael Shockley, the senior writer, webmaster for IcemanManiacs.com for all of your Evansville Iceman information needs, including who's been signed before it's released. Hint, hint. You can check out IcemanManiacs.com 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, IcemanManiacs.com.
And I'm also failed amateur firefighter.
Yeah.
We'll see you on the radio.
The puck is in. The home team wins the good old hockey game.